My name's Doug, and you suck, and this is the Spellbound Podcast, you bloody...
Hark, O mighty one, our sacrifice begins. We commence.
Welcome to Spellbird, a podcast about the Dungeon Crawl Classics role-playing game. It's time to party like it's 1974.
Spellbird is back with another first-time guest, an author of third-party DCC adventures that have already become cult classics. Players who've tried to escape an insane computer while fighting a yeti, explored temple ruins while beset by giant hamsters, or failed to leave an evil sentient inn once getting sucked into it. We'll know the press name, Vance Games. I'm Judge Jen, and with me tonight are Judge Julian.
Squeak, 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 squeak.
And our special guest, Daniel Vance.
Hey.
Sadly, the Black Death has come for Judge Jeff this week, but we hear he'll be alive again for the next show, hopefully. With that, we'll move over to Tavern Talk.
Welcome, friends. Good to see you.
I only had one drink to calm my nerves.
Innkeeper, a drink of your most expensive.
Tavern Talk.
So, regretfully, my week has been devoid of DCC except for unfinished products on paper, aka editing. So, next. How about you, Julian?
I have been playtesting, and editing, and editing, and revising, and playtesting, and editing, so it's been pretty
nice.
Fun, although just a ton of work. It comes at that good work time over Christmas and New Year's, where I actually can do some stuff because my work life gets quiet. So that's been good, and have had some great playtests with my local guys here, the last of which is coming up on New Year's Day in Buffalo, Minnesota, when me and mighty Mississippi Matt Towell will be driving up and doing a game-a-thon up in Buffalo with Patrick Baumgard, and running my last playtest for my current project there, and Matt is going to run some MCC and some Dark Trails. So both of those are pretty fun. And then in the background, I'm kind of trying to figure out what the heck GaryCon stuff I'm going to run, because I think we have to probably turn our stuff in pretty soon.
Yeah. By the time this airs, it's too late for most games to be submitted, but you can give it a shot if our listeners need to. I am in the same boat, Julian, trying to figure out what I'm running. What games are you playtesting? What genre of DCC?
I've been doing two short DCC adventures. So I am on my
straight
second.
DCC?
Yep.
Not Dying Earth?
No.
Wow.
And,
who knew?
Well, now you know. I am hoping to do some Dying Earth playtesting soon, but I
so
don't have...
So maybe that's your GaryCon docket.
Well, that is, in fact, a possibility, yes. That is one way it could go, but then I'd have to... Anyway, that's a whole other story, but that is... Let's just leave it at that. That is a possibility.
All right, that's Julian's Tavern. Judge Daniel, or do you prefer Dan?
Either is fine, actually. It doesn't matter. I'm running a home game still, which I've been running for a while. And
is it DCC?
It's DCC, yeah.
Awesome.
I was doing first edition a lot, but I've since come completely into the fold, and DCC is about the only thing I run anymore, except for an occasional Hyperborea game, because that system is it's pretty sweet. Talanian makes a good game. What can I say? I'm mostly writing. Like right now, I'm working on my next Book Abraxas, which I was thinking about playtesting at GaryCon, but I'm not 100% on. And I'm just finishing up our next release, Auron's Challenge. So it's, you know, like that's one illustration away from being done.
Awesome. So, well, you know I'm going to be pinging you on those in a little bit.
Sure.
Do you know what you're running at GaryCon? Or?
I'd signed up for four, and I was going to do Mother's Maze, Auron's Challenge. And I was thinking about trying to run Sargasso of Space, which is it's a space setting for DCC. And then Book Abraxas, which isn't, you know, I don't know about the last two. It's a lot of work getting them off the ground in time for GaryCon.
We totally, totally understand that.
But absolutely.
I mean, I don't know about you guys, but that the whole room debacle thing kind of set me back a bit. So it's like, you know, I lost prep time getting that straightened out.
Oh, from the hotels.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was some craziness.
Oof.
I don't know. What happened?
There was a, I'm not really sure. It was about like 40 hotel rooms got double booked or something like that.
Oof.
And a lot of people were last minute scrambling for rooms. And I think most of them got sent over to a new place, which is offsite. I think it's the Fairfield. I'm not 100% about
that
the name.
Sounds right.
But, I got, you know, Carmen and I got caught up in that. We were able to last minute get into the Grand Geneva because a friend decided to, you know, he's going on a trip to Burma instead. So, you know, that all worked out really well, you know?
Mm. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff was going to be interested to know that I'm sending him to Burma so I can take his room and go to GaryCon this year.
That's how you do it.
Yeah. That's going to be really... Judge Jeff, see what happens when you miss an episode.
Nice. Well, why don't we go through some of the mailbag without him next?
Isn't it Myanmar?
Oh, instead of Burma?
Yeah, I'm just, I don't know, sorry.
Myanmar?
Sorry.
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
Dealer's choice, man.
Well, okay.
I call upon the flame to summon you.
Who will deliver the message for me?
I came here to give you these facts.
Summon email.
All right. Pluck out that first email.
All right. Reaching into the bag. Here we go from Judge Daniel J. Bishop. Here we go. Hey there, Spellburners. DCC has produced a lot of alternative settings now, from the original gothic horror of Transylvanian Adventures through the post-apocalypse of Mutant Crawl Classics, to the deep space future of Starcrawl and Operation Bug Hunt. We have Bronx Beast, Primal Tales, Dark Trails, Black Powder Black Magic, Crawl Jammer, America, Ghost Like Crime, Phantasmagoria, Trench Crawl Classics, True Vigilante, and more. I'm sure that Judge Julian will recall at least one I haven't mentioned by name. Terror the Stratus Fiend, ye old editor. Perhaps you might consider an episode looking at these alternative settings. It would be cool to discuss how they might be used together, for example, Vigilantes in Nowhere City. There you go, Judge Julian, or hunting an incursion of bugs along some dark western trail. Just an idea. Love the podcast. And Judge Daniel. Oh, that's a pretty cool idea. I think...
blend them, maybe?
Yeah, do we do a lightning round right now? We're all pretty creative.
Sure.
I actually have always wanted... Well, I don't even know which one this would be. I've always wanted to do a post-apocalyptic Nowhere City. So I think I would do an American Nowhere City game. It's always sort of been in my plan.
Nice.
What would Judge Daniel? What would you scramble?
Honestly, I've been working on it's on the back burners, but I've been working on something an Eternal City stuck in the multiverse that would do well with a crossover like that, and it's something I've already started writing, but I kind of shoved it aside for some other things so I could, you know. but it's in the works. So
awesome. I would say Black Sun Deathcrawl on Dark Trails.
Ooh.
Or
Dark Trails Death. Wait, Black Sun Dark Trails.
Yeah, something like that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Black Sun Death Trail. Yeah.
That would go together probably pretty well, actually.
I'd have to look more into Phantasmagoria, but I think that could blend with Crawl Jammer pretty nicely too.
If you're
just putting things together, I mean, like, you know, if you want to go for the shock value, I think I would try Beatty's and cram it in there with Vigilante City and see if that if that could be a thing. People might object. I don't really know.
Well, this could be an episode where we actually have to plot out, write an outline of an adventure, but that's not today. But cool idea.
I want to use Rock God Death Fugue with Skull and Crossbones Classics. I think that'd be awesome.
But is the later one even available yet?
It's not fully available, but there are parts of it that have been done and put out there. Hmm. Just because.
I'm thinking of Star Crawl and Country Crawl Classics.
There you go.
Oh, God.
Backworld Crawl. That's
nice.
The Mos Eisley Players.
That's right.
I'm not sure how we would do a full show of it besides just trying to put square pegs in round holes.
Yeah.
And here's the slough off residual stuff, Mr. Bishop.
Well, I considered Judge Daniel to be a volunteer in this regard. So I do kind of like the idea. Awesome. So perhaps that will be Judge Daniel's next appearance. He can go first and give us a cool idea that he's cooked up, which actually, as prolific as he is, he'll just whip out something that's awesome and then we'll feel stupid. But anyway, that'd still be kind of fun.
He'll say, "Hey, I wrote this." Yeah.
Yeah. He'll be like, "Oh, here it is. Here's a, 5,000 word little thing I just whipped up. Ha ha." That'll be
one page dungeons would be awesome for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we don't have our handy dandy timer with us.
Yeah. We went way over.
We did okay. We had fun with it. It's all good
enough.
Our last email for the evening comes to us from our friend John Williams, who says, "After listening to the episode about clerics being replaced by wizards, I figured that thieves were basically the same thing. Casting spells from scrolls, read languages, forge documents, find and disable traps, picking locks, picking pockets, and disguising self could all be folded into the wizard class. Climbing, handle poison, backstab, sneaking, and hiding could all be folded into the warrior class. Really, there's nothing special about the thief that makes it worth keeping as a separate class, because it's really just a worse warrior that does things every adventurer would want to do, but slightly better. Well, once cleric spells get thrown onto the wizard class, and the thief skills get added to warrior and wizard, the next logical step is that warriors and wizards become unneeded classes, and elf becomes the only class really needed in DCC RPG.
Boo.
Oh, wait for it. With all the cleric spells, thief skills, and warrior abilities, the elf gives everyone all they need and reduces all the extra class choices that just bog down the game. Smiley face. And this is where, I'm kind of glad Jeff isn't with us right this moment. we'll skip over Julian's commentary. What about you, Mr. Vance?
Is this a bad place to say that elf is my favorite class?
No.
You know, I don't think you can get rid of thieves. I mean, they're an amazing class. I mean, like, they're one of the best, that's the problem with DCC is that all of the classes are so well written that, they're like, like the thief for DCC is like the best thief that I've seen. And, the wizard is the best wizard. It's, it's the reason I love DCC so much is, the classes just rock, but you need that thief. I mean, right now my home group, they don't have a thief and they are struggling.
Oh yeah.
You know,
Yeah, I mean, the casting spells from scrolls can kind of go in there, but yeah.
That hasn't really come up much.
Who's the OD&D white box scholar?
Oh, because, crap, not me.
Because I was looking at Wikipedia really quick, and if it's correct, it looks to me like the original box set had just the fighting man, the magic user, and the cleric.
That's true. The wizard and the warrior were first, and then the cleric was the next to be added.
So there you go.
And then thieves.
Well, you know, so, and I can
if
see
that's your style, yeah.
Sure, and you know, you can kind of hear Gary and Dave and those guys saying, "Well, how would you like to pick the lock?"
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they don't want you to roll a die. They want you to be like, "Well, the lock is a metal box between, you know, 3 inches by 8 inches. It has a 23 millimeter keyhole, you know." And so they would go through the whole thing, like from a actual.
Almost from an engineering standpoint, yeah.
Yeah, and also just like they'd be, I think, from what the stuff I've read, they'd actually be more interested in how you actually are describing how you would like to open it, which would make some of the thief stuff. But DCC does the same thing, and it says, you know, try to get people to talk about how they're actually interacting with the environment versus just rolling a die to overcome a, you know, abstraction, right?
In the old games, I think they would have been much more interested in how you were going to break that lock, because of all the rules for, you know, kicking doors down and such. You know, like that's why I think that the thief was, you know, unneeded for the most part, because they were either going to run through traps or, you know, just kind of try to kick them down. I mean, you know.
That's right, because every door was stuck.
Yeah. You had to roll to see if the door was stuck. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the, you know, that even in first edition, there were like, there's a chart for what do you do when you come to that door? And it's very like, you're like, God damn, don't any of these doors work?
Yeah.
Apparently not.
Yeah. And every time you kick one in, you have X percent chance of a monster finding you. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that's
some monster.
That was the great thing about B1, you know, that, what is it? Into the Unknown, where the dungeon is like, you know, pretty much blank, and you write it as you go. But there's a room in there, and when you open it up, it's just a bunch of stacked doors, and you know, just like some dungeon, you know, accoutrements that you can.
Right.
You know, apparently, after you've kicked all the doors in, you can go back and put new ones on.
Well, I think going back to this list, I think Handle Poison would definitely be on the wizard side, not the warrior. I mean, if you
probably
feel you need to split these, but I'm one of those that the thief is one of my new favorite classes lately.
It's hard to
beat. Because casting spells and everything, but the warrior's already pretty busy. Or I'm sorry, the wizard's already pretty busy, and the warrior's out there doing his mighty deed stuff. So the thief gets to kind of sneak around and do his own thing on his own, and I'm kind of digging that.
Yeah, I mean, if you were just playing Black Hack and you had a wizard and a warrior, your high dexterity fighter would be a thief, right? And he'd wear leather armor, so he didn't have disadvantages, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, he would have his high dex roll would be unencumbered by metal armor and so on and so on. And the more attribute focused your game is, and the loosier, goosier. Yes,
for?
Thank you. You got it. The loosier, goosier that you like to play, then, you know, then it doesn't matter so much. And, you know, but in DCC, of course, they made it a luck based thing broadly, you know, so there's not just skills, because a high dex or a high, you know, a lot of that could stand in for those skills, but the luck score is really different, and that's kind of where it becomes a Fawford Mouser thing, and you know where.
Well,
it's,
yeah, even then, Gray Mouser made the choice to be primarily a thief.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
With the ability to cast a spell from Scroll if need be.
Yeah,
but luck makes the thief class more like an Appendix N in Thief, right? Instead of just a warrior who's, you know, wears leather instead of plate mail or something.
Well, the luck mechanic definitely makes the DCC Thief, you know, what it is. That and their crits on every backstab, which is amazing. Like, oh my God. You know?
Yeah. I think that's the only game. I was going to say, who does that besides DCC?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Indeed.
It makes them brutal. I mean, a really well paid thief is, it's hard to beat.
Well, I think, we've tried to actually take this probably more seriously than this guy intended, Mr. Williams, Judge John, I should say. I think was maybe in just intending to poke a little fun at Judge Jeff. And I like doing that because Judge Jeff is stupid about clerics.
So and, silent. So stoic.
Yes. So
he's not outspoken at all.
Yeah. So you know, that I don't agree, but it could be. I think going back to Magic User and Fighter and just running some games like that could be actually pretty excellent. So I would take the challenge, but I'm not going all elf, and that's the last thing I have to say about it.
I would play that game just to try it. I'd be with you, Dan.
That's a rocking class, but I would play a game with all thieves. I'll tell you, that would be a fun game.
And hey, there's an idea for something to run. Awesome. Well, thank you for the emails, gentlemen. Rest of our listeners, please continue to email us at theband@spellburn.com. And now, finally, our mighty deeds.
Let the combat begin! To the death!
Why, behold, our hero.
Huh, so you want to play rough, eh? We'll take this.
Mighty deeds.
Daniel Vance! Insert predictable interview questions here. So, how did you get into gaming?
You know, I've been gaming since 78. My stepdad, Terry, he started with, you know, with D&D, you know, that first box set. And I remember I had to fight to be in that room so I could watch all these adults play D&D. And the first thing I really, really remember is Tomb of Horrors. And that just set it, you know. And then after that, it was only a matter of time before I like begged him enough that he ran me through my first adventure, which was B1. It died in the dining room, crushed by a giant frog. But you know, within seconds, you know.
Yep.
But it was amazing, and I just went from there.
So what got you into DCC?
What was it like in 2003-04-ish, I ran across the first of Goodman's stuff in the, you know, the for 3.5, you know, the
old line.
Dread Crypt of Shrihaz. I think that was the first one that I saw, and I was just like, what is this stuff? Because, you know, I'd never, okay, this is where I admit I've never actually played 3rd edition or 3.5 or 4th. I have played 5th and I have played, you know, 1st and 2nd edition, but I had never left 1st edition D&D. I'd been playing it since the 70s, you know.
Well, you didn't miss much.
And no, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, those weren't great games. I just loved it so much. I just never, you know. And then I saw
I'm saying that they weren't great games.
I was trying to let people enjoy what they like, but all right.
No, they can enjoy it. People think I'm a jerk anyway. They can still enjoy what they like. It's okay. But, anyway, go ahead.
But I saw that that first edition sensibility, and I just started following, you know, what he was doing. And then when I heard that he was writing an RPG, I was like, this is going to be good. And so, you know, I made sure that I got in on that first, you know, like on that first printing, pre-ordered it. And I remember there was a big delay in.
Oh, so you did the original Kickstarter.
I don't think it was a Kickstarter. I just remember ordering it online. I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
You know, like I had that first edition. I don't think it was a Kickstarter. That was a while ago. But I do remember, like, I was debating on ordering it, and I actually emailed Joseph Goodman. I don't even know if he would remember this. And I was like, I want to order this thing, but I don't know, you know, because I'm thinking about moving. Will I actually get it in time? You know, like, you know, because like it's been delayed, or it seems to have been delayed a couple of times. And, you know, will it be out by September or something like that? And in the email, Joseph Goodman promises that his entire crew will commit seppuku if if it's not completed. And I was like, nice. I was like, okay, well, I guess I can order it then. And then, you know, I mean, you know.
Damn, no pressure.
He was true to his word. He, you know, like they got it out. So.
And now that you have it, what do you enjoy most about it?
You know, TCC is it's funny because a lot of people think that it's just OSR. You know what I mean? Like they look at it and they think like this thing is just like a straight OSR machine, and it is like so deceptively avant-garde. I mean, it's like it's the class mechanics in it aren't. I mean, they're just so much better than the class mechanics from a lot of other games. I tried fifth edition and I was like, man, I'm pretty bored. You know, I mean, like it's
even with all those options.
I was just like, you know, your warrior can't do anything. There's no mighty deeds. You know what I mean? Like they can't like your wizard can't upend the entire world. You know what I mean? Your thief's not critting every time you hit sneakily. It just, you know, like the possibilities just seem much more open-ended in DCC and you know, everything else is very limited in scope. I guess Joseph wasn't afraid of writing a game where he gave like a power and an ability to his players to take the story over. Do you know what I mean? Like to just take it and make it their own. And other games are like, they just seem terrified of that possibility that your players could gain control of the story. And I'm like, well, that's where the fun is.
That's
a nice fine line.
No, I mean, it makes a good point, which is there's no real railroading in DCC because you can bring him into a dungeon with the one entrance in the front, and it's just a series of 10 rooms. But in room 5, if the guy spell burns 18 points and he rolls a 20, you know, he's going to bust your adventure wide open no matter what you did. And it's also going to be radically different than if they made every choice exactly the same, but he rolls a 1 on the same roll.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, which, by the way, corresponds to some of the playtesting stuff I've done recently because, you know, the things can wildly fluctuate so much. But that it's a story game in a OSR body, right?
I'd like to point out, though, that if you're going to spell burn 18, you should just go the full 20 because then, you know, it's that you double it. You know what I mean? You get that automatic 20. It's as if you rolled a 20. So there's no use in spell burning 18.
Well, yeah.
Okay. You know?
Okay.
I mean, unless it drops you past 0 on stamina.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to be dead, but I do want the spell to go off.
I mean, priorities.
It would be a pretty epic way to go in a con game, though. So, that's a good idea.
Has anybody ever spell burned to death? I've never seen it.
I know at the beginning of one of the games at GaryCon this past year, Judge Jeff spellburned everything down to 3 the very first round of the game and cast Magic Shield, I believe it was.
Damn.
Which added all sorts of stupid bonuses to everybody throughout the game and pretty much nerfed the game, which kind of sucked for the judge.
Yeah.
But then there's our characters left, you know, carrying his little character around in a backpack or something. We turned it so he could face backwards like a little kid. I don't know.
You can still have an extra dragon show up in that adventure, right?
For what John Hammersley was doing with Swordfish Islands, I'm not sure. He was trying to keep it kind of standardized to what he had set down to do.
You just need a good flash flood at that.
I'm sure if need be. Oh, that happened anyway. Yeah.
I'd have like the next encounter is a titanic castle sized blue dragon drops out of the sky, coming at the party, going, "Who hates the clerics? Who hates the clerics?" And just see what happens.
Perfect. So Dan, I'm noticing this interesting backstory of starting in AD&D as a kid, or OD&D, if you will, and now you're an art teacher? That's a really interesting now and then effect.
Well, my father is an artist, you know, he's a potter, and so, you know, and was an art professor, and my mother was a teacher, so it really wasn't a stretch to, you know, to be an art teacher. So I kind of ended up there that way. Plus all the drawing in those high school notebooks of D&D characters and, you know, dragons coming from the sky.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's a nice, cause and effect there.
I can't say that I ever grew up. I mean, it's never been a problem.
Which of those older, well, it doesn't have to be older. Which of those D&D artists do you like the best, if you had to pick one?
Wow.
Or two.
You know, Sutherland is really unappreciated, I think. You know, because, like, some of his stuff looks very crude, but that man is so imaginative. Like, you know, when you look at, you know, like, his work, and he set the tone. I mean, like, he designed a lot of those early monsters, and we kept that forever. And, you know, but honestly, I love all of those first, Trampier. I've never known how to say that. But, you know, that guy was amazing, you know.
Did Sutherland, is he the guy that did the dungeon, the DMG?
Yeah.
The cover?
City of Brass. Yeah, he did that.
You've seen at GaryCon, the full size painting that they, it's just mind blowing. So if any listeners, if you're going to GaryCon, they have it out in one of the rooms at some point, and just go look at it, because if you know, or even if you don't know the book, but especially if you know the book and you're so used to looking at it, but it's folded out as the painting, and it's just, it's thousand times cooler in that format, and yet it's that same image or images that you've seen forever, so it's really cool.
That didn't look anything like I thought it was going to when I saw it in person, and I don't know how it was different, but I was like, but it was very much different being right there in front of it.
Cool. I think he is overlooked. That's, and when you see that painting, you're like, whoa. So yeah.
So what kind of mediums do you work in, Dan?
Honestly, I'm trained as a sculptor. And so, just a lot of, like, well, metal, plaster, you know, wood, stuff like that. But I still draw sometimes. I'm not really trained as an illustrator. I just kind of fumble through it for my own stuff. But it's definitely not my first love, you know. Because I will let the people that are really amazing at illustration do their, you know, do it, and they'll do it much better than me.
Well, that you might be one of, I won't say the only, but one of the first third-party publishers that is actually writing and illustrating his own work. I mean, Doug's got the Hobonomicon that he works on both sides of that with, but I don't know of many, I say many others, at least none that have been on Spellburn.
Yeah. There's
I need to leave caveats so I don't piss anybody off.
Prison of the Mad Gods guy. I think he did his own art, which was fun. Which actually has a little bit of a Daniel Vance thing going. I think you guys do you know what one I mean, Jen? The one in the D20? It's a funnel. We reviewed it like 3 months ago or something.
Oh, sure.
Because we're waiting for him to. Yeah, I know, right? It's been a few reviews lately. No, but it was we were waiting for him to publish it, and he got delayed a few months. Anyway,
Scott Swift?
No.
Nope, wrong review.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna find his name.
Yeah, you do that.
Anyway, he's the only one I could think of because he does some. So that's a good trivia question. I'm sure Mr. Bishop will give us like 18 other.
Right.
Yeah. So Judge Daniel, go ahead.
I will say this, that, you know, art training is, it actually is a huge asset when you're trying to write something, because you're taught how to, you know, just kind of work creatively, to find ideas creatively. And it really lets you, I don't know, brainstorm in a way that, I think some people find is difficult. But as an artist, you're just taught to think in certain ways and come up with ideas in certain ways that it makes it easy.
So do you end up doing the art and the text kind of simultaneously, or do you always write first?
In my notebooks that I've got many of, you know, I write out all my game ideas, or I literally travel around with like a graph paper notebook everywhere I go. And if I have any thoughts at all, I write them in that notebook. And I don't try to edit like my ideas, and because that's where most people like mess up, is that they start with editing their thoughts, because they're like, what if this isn't good enough? What if somebody sees my ideas and they think it's stupid? And you have to stop that immediately. And you just write out any idea that you have, no matter how stupid it seems. And then you just keep doing that. And eventually what you find is that you have something that's amazing. And that is something anybody can do if they stop the self-editing process just immediately, you know?
So write down all the ideas then cherry pick through them later.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't, you never think, you only write. You just don't. Even if it's nonsensical, you just write it down. If you have a thought, you write that down.
Now, you mentioned graph paper. Do you actually like sketch or map rooms out as you kind of brainstorm?
Yeah, I do. I make silly little cartoons to myself as I go. You know, whether it's like, sometimes it's a visual idea and I draw it really quick, and sometimes it's a bunch of sentences, or sometimes it's both. But whatever it is, I just try to capture it immediately. It's often by my bedside, so if I wake up in the middle of the night and I have an idea, because how many times have you, late at night, you're like, you have this amazing idea, and then you're like, I'll remember it. And then you wake up, and the only thing that you remember is you had a great idea. You know, and I think...
You don't even remember what color it
was. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that's something everybody happens. If you wait to try to capture your ideas, that's gone. And you just have to build a discipline of having something to write with at all times, even if it's just on your phone. You know, and there are times when I will email stuff to myself, like, just so, like, don't forget this idea. And then, you know, hopefully it makes sense later. You know.
That's actually really good advice.
I have done that too. Email especially. I email when I'm at work. I'll email myself to, you know, and say, hey, these three things or whatever.
Yeah. Don't forget to do the laundry. Yeah.
Well, no. Hopefully with something more inspired than that would be the point. Occasionally, I do. I have also said, don't forget to do this one thing, usually that the other Judge Jen wants me to do, but that's a whole different. That's not what we come to Spellburn.
Wife about. Jen. Yeah.
Yes.
Other wife.
Judgy Jen. Yeah.
So let's see. We've got the writing and we've got the art. Mr. Vance, I did notice you have an article in Damn Issue 2. Uh-huh. Is there anything else in DCC Works besides your own press, publications?
The Gong Farmers and the, I did something on Blood Magic.
Oh, wow. What year was
that? That was this year.
Okay.
But I haven't, but honestly. I
couldn't search that one.
I didn't, I didn't start writing until not that long ago. I mean, I was always writing stuff, but it was just mostly just to use. And I was always like, you know, I should write because I think I could do this, you know, and, you know, like most people, I think most gamers have that thing where they're saying like, I should write a module. It would be amazing. I would do all these things. And then we just sit there and we never do it. You know, I was at Todd Bunn's game store, shameless plug, Gateway Games and More in Cincinnati. And, you know, yes. Jim Wampler's in there and he's running, you know, his MCC game or what became his MCC game that was written there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in there and I'm running, you know, a D&D game. And that was like 2000, I don't know, is it 14 or 15? I can't remember. But I actually wrote Mother's Maze before I put out any other thing. And I ran it as D&D first. And it was like right across the table from Jim, who's running his MCC. Like, you know, those two things were being written at the same time. And, you know, it was just kind of weird. And, you know, Todd Bunn was like, you know, Jim's writing a, he's writing a game. And I was like, it kind of made me realize like, you know, I could just actually finish this. I could do this, you know, because you see it happen. And then that was kind of the impetus to just, you know, finally put stuff out.
So were these based on part of your campaign games that you'd been running or your home games?
Yeah. Escape from the Demon Inn was from an adventure that I ran in 2010 or 11. That was first edition D&D originally. And, you know, the players were very kind of freaked out and pissed off when they realized they were inside of basically a giant mimic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. You might be the only person.
Am I missing one?
To have the first edition version of that, and it's pretty damn rough.
And the first name of it was
Rebellion at Rassilon was the original because it came with a fake title, you know, because it's Escape from the Demon.
Okay.
But I didn't want anybody to know that they were playing that, which is, you know, I think it's a great idea.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But not marketing gold.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> Okay. And then we have Temple of the Hamster,
which was the first thing that I wrote.
That was the first one for DCC.
The first one I wrote for DCC alone, yeah.
Okay.
And this is where I confess that I wrote that module without ever having judged DCC before. And then the first time I ever was a DCC judge was for the playtest. And I had I was just like, I'm very vague on some of these rules that I have. Like, I don't play clerics. So, you know, like cleric rules, I was like, I don't know. And what I have discovered is that when you're running, you know, DCC and you don't know, if you're lazy or you just, you know, you just come with something you don't know, just wait, you know, when you just this is what happens and you just sit back and quietly wait. And then the people at the table will just, they'll start looking it up and you just like try to be mysterious like a Sphinx and they'll figure it out for you.
It actually basically gives that advice in Temple of the Hamster, right?
It probably does. Yeah.
Yeah. I just did a quick reread today and there are several little things like that. You know, just little kind of GM to GM type asides like that. And it's very, you know, room 15, why would this stupidly large trove of treasure be in this module? So that you as the game master can tell your adventurers that they missed all the best stuff.
That's traditional, right?
Nice. Spoiler alert.
Yeah,
I mean that's
this podcast is for judges only, so we're all it's a safe space. It's a safe space for judges.
That, but I mean, you know, I mean, you're like the judges always tell the players like when they're done, like, oh, you missed the, you know, amazing item, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they gloat about it, you know. So I thought I would write in something just for them to gloat about.
Well, and as a layout note, since I've been doing so much DCC editing these past few years, I am super appreciative of all of your appendices. You've got items, spells, the monsters and encounters, pre-generated crimes for why they're there in the first place.
That's classic.
That.
It's not just a crime, it's a It's a description of your crime.
Text, yeah.
Described by the person who's imprisoned you, right?
I think
so, which gives it a lot more flavor. It's not just like, you stole something.
Well, some are crimes against nature, but
public indecency. Someone please inform the defendant that they cannot argue their innocence for this crime without first wearing clothes. Right. That's not the best one.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, those are pretty fun.
And then you've got the pre-gen characters in there and everything. And I think that this thing is ready to pick up and go.
Well,
that is brilliant.
My understanding, I've always tried to study what other people have written before me. I learned most of everything from looking at Gygax's Tomb of Horrors, but when Goodman was, coming out and he's writing, his stuff was a revelation because he came up with this idea, nothing that is not needed. You know what I mean? And he's trying to get you, he's clearly trying to get you through an adventure in one night.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have anything that's like dead space, anything where you're like, this is an empty room for no purpose of having an empty room. And so, in the interest of getting people through quickly, I thought you've got to lay it out. And, people probably want, they probably want pre-generated characters because that way they can just pick up and play. Although I went an additional step forward. I think, I looked at what Goodman was trying to do, and I always thought, and this is, what makes me overwrite, because if you look at my stuff, it's usually longer than a DCC module normally is, especially now. But I try to make it so the way that he doesn't have anything which is dead, but at the same time try to make it so that you can also go in any direction and you still get out. Through or out, and
you still have some semblance of completion.
Well, it's in a book, a fantasy author, if you, no matter which way the main character goes, that's the right way. They're fated to go the right way. They never have to backtrack through the sewers
We missed this route over
back room,
here.
Looking for the key, which is going to get them to the special thing, which will get them out the secret door. They never miss that. No matter which way they go, that's the right way through. And so, in Mother's Maze, if you've read that, and Escape from the Demon, and I tried to make it so no matter which way you go, it's the right way. If you decide you want to go explore this way over here, that will complete the adventure. So that it, just like your person in a story, no matter which direction you go, as long as you survive, it's the right direction. So it's the kind of complete reverse of a railroad where they just have, there's only one completion, but it's just that any way you go will complete it.
As opposed to some of those mid-level Gygaxians where, okay, we're done. No, we're missing that one token.
Right.
Exactly.
So, Daniel, that is so greatly appreciated, especially from a judge's point of view. I don't have to sit there and try to lead the players back by the nose to the one thing that they may have missed.
Well,
and that's brilliant.
They want to go the way they want to go. I've never really been the kind of judge or dungeon master that wants to control the players. That's not my, because I don't think we're there to control anybody. I think, we're just there to have fun. And, people want that sense of agency. They want to be able to go, they want to find their own path. And so if you can write something that does that, then you've got it. But that does mean that you have to write three times more module, three times more adventure, and most of it will never get used.
So what inspired the mid-level adventure to be published first?
The Temple of the Hamster?
The Temple of the Hamster is level 3. And most people come out with funnels or level 1.
First off, I thought a giant hamster would absolutely crush you as a, it would, my hamster god in my mind.
That's not a bad thing.
Was going to roll over a bunch of zero levels. And also, I never would have been able to write that many crimes, I would have run out of stuff. But I thought, the mid-range is often where a lot of the fun is. You know, like, because in DCC, yeah, the funnels are amazing. But then, you know, like mid-level adventures, you're powerful, but you're not too powerful. You have a lot of options.
There's almost a slouch, yeah.
You know, you could take a couple of hits. You know,
that's a very AD&D thing, right? That the sweet spot is from like fourth to ninth level, kind of, right?
That fifth level, right, when you get fireball and you're just like,
yeah,
you know,
yep.
You're like, I'm not a god, but I'm not, you know, I'm not.
But the thief is, but the thief is seventh now, right? So. If the mage, right. If the mage is fifth, the thief is seventh or eighth, which is good because,
but the cleric's way behind,
But no, but DCC that equates, right? A third level DCC guy is roughly fifth, sixth.
I think so. I've never seen a. Did anybody ever make something that showed like a level by level comparison?
I mean, it was roughly 2-for-1.
Yeah, but I think there's just kind of a very rough rule of thumb, like a double it type thing.
Yeah, DCC is the only game I know where you're first level and you feel like a badass. I mean, like, you know, because like,
oh yeah,
in first edition, like you when you're first level, second level, you did not feel like a badass. Even at third level, you're like, here I feel 3 seconds from getting my ass kicked, you know. But in DCC, you're like, I feel like I'm something of a badass over here.
But it's a glass cannon thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can be real. You can, you know, cast a sleep spell. If you do everything right, get a little bit lucky and burn a heck of a lot of points, you can put everybody in a mile to sleep.
Yeah. I've done it.
Yeah. Same with color spray.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But then, you know, but you can still get sneezed on and fall over dead.
I almost TPK'd my party just last time accidentally. Just one spell with the, you know, evil priestess, and I almost wiped everybody out. I think one person was still standing at the end, and I was just like, oh god, what did I do? You know, it's that moment when you just roll too well and you're just like, oh crap.
Did you go through a lot of Judges Guild stuff when you were playing a lot of AD&D?
Not in the 80s. You know, which is weird because, like, I don't know about you guys, but in the 80s when 82, you know, 85 or whatever, when you would see the Judges Guild stuff, you would just kind of like, nah, you know what I mean? Because it looked as a kid like too cheap. And then later, you know, like you started running into it and actually reading it and you're like, oh, this is pretty good. And then you started hunting it out. But now, you know, in hindsight, you're like, it was so easy to find and it was like everywhere. And then now it's like, I mean, I've got most of it, but you know, but it's hard. It's harder to find. Yeah.
The reason I ask is because when I was just rereading Temple of the Hamster today, it really kind of reminded me of that early days, even more 70s and 80s maybe, of just totally kind of cut loose, you know, we're sitting around the table having fun, just that mentality where I'm not afraid to put a silly joke in or a humorous moment or whatever. There's absolutely no reason to pretend an elf game has to be overly serious, and which I agree with, and you know, I'm a big fan of Teagle Manor but also a lot of other Judges Guild stuff, and it, I think, probably is the thing that reminded me of that most that I've read in DCC was it harkens back to that really kind of anything goes spirit of the 70s to me, you know?
Well,
when I read the Judges Guild stuff, I mean, there's probably crap like that in the 80s too that I don't even remember, but, you know.
The whole idea behind Temple of the Hamster, honestly, I was at, I can't remember, some store somewhere, and I saw this hamster toy, you know, like a rubber hamster toy, and I was like, oh my god, that's like a perfect mini, you know, to use. And I was and at the scale it's enormous, and I was just like, oh my god. And then it was just kind of like a module set around this idea of, and I was like, so it should be a temple, and you know,
I could see that.
But it was also a reaction against you know, like all the just super seriousness, you know, like back in the 70s, people weren't, they were very aware they were just playing a game. You know what I mean? Like, and,
oh, yeah.
And they were just there to have fun. And, you know, somewhere along the way, we got, like, you know, especially in the late 80s, super serious with lots of plots, and there was always a Dark Lord, and we were always saving the world, and that got tiring, like really long plot arcs. And mm-hmm. you know, I think DCC's love of kind of episodic play and just some silliness is, you know, it goes really good. I mean, like, you know, I think we lost something when we left that initial silliness behind, because you can do something that's very silly in one second and then be very serious the next. And those two moments play well off each other, you know, like you, mm. you know.
And you do that really well in Escape from the Demon Inn. You pair the humor with the horror, and it meshes so nicely. It creates this expert level imagery through the text. When Carmen was running it at GaryCon, I was lucky enough to sit in for the last half of it, and it was amazing. And we've talked about Temple of the Hamster a lot being level mm-hmm. 3. Mother's Maze is a funnel, and Escape from the Demon Inn is back to level yep. 3. So
I do love me some level 3.
Do you plan to do anything as a bridge to that? Or
eventually.
Is your level 3 stuff what other... That's what characters have to climb up to in order to get to them, right? Well, your modules are the prize?
No, not necessarily. I will say this. I am writing the newest one right now, Aron's Challenge, and yes, it is level 3. but it doesn't have to be. Originally, I wrote it with as a range, level 3 to 5, but I was kicking around the idea that it could be a funnel, because it actually, I think you could run it as a funnel and have people survive. You know, that one is really kind of strange anyway, because you start dead. So, you know,
oh, nice.
Yeah, it's the, what do I do when I've just killed all of my adventurers module? You know, so mm-hmm. as a DM, you know, like you've managed to kill everybody, either on purpose mm-hmm. or through accident. And then you're like, how can I salvage this game? And so your
nice.
Characters are in the land of the dead. And if they will take the Death's Gods challenge, they can win their way back to the world of the living, you know, or, you know.
But they do it as a group, as opposed to just trying to revive one person.
Yeah, they go through.
Okay.
I mean, you can backstab people and sneak out on your own and leave everybody else to die. I mean, that's always a possibility, you know. But yeah, you know, if you fail, I guess your soul goes into the meat grinder, because basically, you know, Aron devours your soul if you don't survive. But it's pretty cool. You know, it's about ready to go. So
that's a generous fate.
Yeah.
So you've got that coming up. You've got the Sargasso of Space.
Yep. That one, it was one of those weird things. I was working on a Space Crawl Classics right as Star Crawl just came out, and I was like, damn it, you know. And
I feel
and,
that
and
yeah.
it's like, you know, well, whatever, you know. So so I was just like, well, I can boil it down, simplify out rules that don't need to be put out again, and you know,
make it more of an adventure.
Yeah, you know, well, originally my idea for Space Crawl when I was writing it was everything was based around my idea of dungeon in space, because a lot of space games become political fiascos. You know, they focus a lot on
40K.
Yeah, they become like all about space politics, space mercantilism, and they don't focus on that kind of adventure format that we've come to love. And so it's just like, okay, so it's, if you take the idea that it's DCC, but it's just like a DCC module, it's just the trappings of space, you know, then you've got it. You know, so it wouldn't be like, oh, we need to go talk to this star prince and figure out a cargo to ship to this place that nobody
right.
really cares about. You're like,
no, it, Legion of Space is the novel that you read for that.
Yeah.
For what you're describing, right? Like, it's totally a D&D adventure just set on other planets and everything. And
Star Wars.
Star Wars is good like that.
Traveler's already got it. You know, like, if you want space merchants and stuff like that, I think you could just go play Traveler. And if you want to do like political stuff in space, then you should play Fading Suns. You know, but I was like, I was like, you know, Dungeon in Space, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds cool. What else is next on your plate?
Well, Book of Braxis. That one is, it's big. I'm at 43 pages and that's just my notes. But that one, I think in addition to the adventure for this, like ultra magical book, which is, the magical equivalent of a nuclear bomb. I'm going to add in a little bit of my game world. So it'd be the Northern Wastes, you know, not like a world guide, but just like a kind of a pocket. Because I think, like, you know, a lot of people that are adventuring really like that, and they get it with, say, the Shutter Mountains or Purple Planet, but they're...
Oh, like a little pocket setting.
Yeah, exactly. But they're not a lot of, you know... just settings where, like, the judge could just, like, I could put the Northern Wastes anywhere in the north, you know, and then there would be towns, but it'd be, you know, kind of minimal, like some towns, some dungeons, some new magic, some stuff like that, but just like a quick fun setting.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Hopefully, you know, it might be something that I try to kickstart because it could be big enough for a box set. I'm not really sure. We'll see if I'm smart enough to kickstart anything.
You guys haven't done a Kickstarter yet.
No,
have
we
you?
Do everything out of pocket. So
nice. Well, we've already established that we can find you at GaryCon coming up.
Yeah, we'll
in
be
March.
There.
Anything between now and then?
Just the scramble to get prepared for GaryCon, really.
So occasionally over at Gateway Games.
Oh yeah, yeah.
All hail Todd Bunn. Yes.
Yeah, he's a good egg.
Yeah, we'll link them as we have linked them many times in our show notes.
Oh, yes.
And the Prison of the Mad Gods is Chris Sellers, and he did do the writing and the art, by the way.
Oh, thank you. That sounds awesome. One last question for you, Judge Daniel. Do you have a favorite child among your works?
Right now, although it's not out yet, Auron's Challenge is definitely going to be the best of everything that I've done to date, but truthfully, Book of Braxis, it's way more, if I can get it off the ground, it's way more creative than anything I've ever worked on.
So, what's the elevator pitch for that? All you said was it's really big and it's a book that's like a nuclear bomb, which is pretty good elevator pitch. I mean, you've definitely intrigued me, but is there, would you like to add like 10 to 15 words to that?
You know, I'm afraid to tell the premise because it's one of those ideas that if I say it, then it gets used. You know what I mean? Like, I guess it doesn't really matter at this point.
Well, speaking of the microphone, cause you know, well, I mean, I'm a shameless thief of ideas myself.
All right. Well, I'll say, but I am writing this. This is happening, even if you manage to write it first. Essentially, the Book of Braxis, the idea is that the adventure is in the book. So so like the dungeon is the book. So when you find the book and you open it up, you enter it, and then once you're inside, you have to get out of it. And the Book of Braxis contains various words of power, which is like a mechanic that I'm writing, which as I've got it right now, once you knew one of the words of power, it would allow you to do something that's like spell burning, but with your mental stats, and you could use that for physical roles. So in other words, your warriors could use words of power when they swung their sword, and they could burn mental stats down to increase their rolls. Those words of power were in the book.
Deed burning.
It also contains unknown words, or unspoken words, which words which had never been spoken before, which could mean anything when pronounced, and they would be akin to a wish spell. And then there were, just other kind of words of magic and things like that, which are part of the book or in the book. And it's just a giant adventure in the book.
Wow. All right, so you best use the rest of this holiday break and get some words on paper. Oh,
there are already words on paper. I just have to
get this thing done.
I've just gotta get it going.
Now, do you do the layout as well as the writing?
No, my
at this stage.
No, my friend Tino lays it all out for me. So
nice. So you're not left doing all.
No,
of
I don't
that.
Have to do any of that.
Awesome.
Very good.
All right. Well, I think we've reached our time limit here, or so our editor will tell us.
Something's different about this episode. I really like it. I think, I feel less...
It's got to be the guest.
Yeah. Oh, it must be the guest.
We should have it more often.
Yeah. I feel rested.
I mean, I'm sitting here. I yell at Vance all the time, but it's the 16-pound black
different
cat.
When it's different. Yeah.
I like having a Mr. Vance. So to our listeners, again, you know the drill. Please email us at theband@spellburn.com. Leave us iTunes reviews or reviews on all of the Spotify medias. We're still crowdsourcing some bumpers. We have gotten a couple different ones. I'm not sure if y'all have noticed. And yeah, that'll... probably pretty much do it for this show. Do we have any last words, gentlemen?
No.
You good? Julian? You've said your piece.
I just want to mention, because I took a look at the notes again, and there are pictures in the Temple of the Hamster. There is a piece of art with toddlers in a gladiator arena fighting with like ball and chain. And anyway.
That was
It's so
that
great.
That was one of Daniel's,
yeah, that was,
yes.
That was me.
I did notice that.
That's a classic. I think we, yeah, anyway.
In my mind, I still hum that Star Trek fight music.
Oh, it's so awesome.
I think that's
no, with that,
actually.
Yeah, it is. It is, actually. And that's, that's the charm. With that, I'll say game on from my end of the world.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for being with us, Daniel
Vance.
Well,
thank you for having me.
And everyone else, have a great night.
You've been listening to Spellburn. Copyright 2017. Our theme song has been graciously provided by Glitter Wizard. Learn more at glitterwizard.bandcamp.com.